Hello everybody to a new episode of Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. This time around, a different format as we wanted to share with you one of the industry talks Radu Palamariu's done recently at Zaragoza Logistics Center on the topics of career transitions and reskilling in supply chain. Do listen in. Radu shared some of his impressions from speaking to many of the executives across the industry, as well as his own lessons and learnings through the 15 years of experience. Hope you like it and you learn a lot from it. Enjoy!
I would like to welcome Radu Palamariu. He is the Managing Director Asia Pacific and Europe of Alcott Global and the Global Head of Supply Chain and Logistics Practice. He has been working on C-level and top management executive shared assignments with top Fortune 500 companies and local European and Asian conglomerates, particularly for manufacturing, logistics, transportation, supply chain management, and e-commerce. He is contributor on latest technologies shaping supply chains, human resources trends, and developments. I know because a few of you mentioned that you are listening to him or you are following his Leader in Supply Chain podcast. Welcome, Radu, and thank you very much for this online session to talk to you about a few questions that all of us we have about the recruitment in case of senior and executive profiles around the world.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Mar, and a pleasure to be with everybody today.
Thank you very much. So should we start with one of the main questions that we have had during the academic year? And it's because the most of our students are senior profiles. And one of the frequent questions that they have is about the transition in their professional career when they are moving industries or when they are moving from one country to other country. So in case that they have around 7-8 years of experience, we also have students that they have more than 7 and 8 years. So if you can give us a little bit of insight about how is working the entry level, if they are moving to other country or, you know, or if they are changing industry. So it will be very appreciated for all of us.
Sure. And as we were discussing, and I want to encourage everybody as we have this exchange, and I know Mar has some questions, and thanks for all of you who have submitted it before. And also let's keep this interactive, right? So if whilst we are sharing, you have some other questions, do feel free to, maybe it's easiest if you put it in the chat, right? So then we can address it. So let's keep this as interactive as possible, because I think that's most useful for all of you, hopefully. Now to your question, Mar, the key principle that I think is important for all of us to remember is don't throw away the baby with the bathwater. What do I mean by that? So most of you have had 6, 7, 8 years, some of you, I think even more of experience, right? That is valuable. There's not something that you should throw away with the bathwater, right? So the best, most practical, now again, there's so many different permutations and possibilities here, but typically as principles, I'll just stick to principles, right? If let's say that you've worked in food and FMCG, right? And then you want to transition into pharma. Well, incidentally, actually, since I was just randomly picking that as an example, but on the last podcast, I actually had Tariq Farouk, who used to work 20 years in FMCG in P&G and Danone, and then he shifted to be SVP of supply chain in Sanofi, which is, as you know, a large pharma company. And he said, actually, that what he did in FMCG helped him a lot because pharma is in many ways backwards, and he could implement a lot of the principles that he had from FMCG to speed up the development in pharma. Similarly, depending on how you shift the industries, you should always aim to make use of what experience you've already had, right? So that's the best way, and also so that you don't start from zero, because 8 years of work experience is worth something. Even if, let's say, you move from supply chain and start doing procurement, it's not like supply chain is completely separated from procurement. So one principle is always do not discount the experience that you've already had. That is valuable. Two, it's also key, who do you focus on, as in your key stakeholders? What do I mean by that? Most HR do not see the value, or they look for boxes. They look for square pegs for square pegs. So if you apply via job portal, and if the HR looks at that, and if you have 8 years of experience in FMCG and you're applying to electronics, they'll say, this person has no idea about electronics because they've done FMCG. Does that mean that you actually have no idea? No, it does mean that most HR don't get it. So the key is make sure you are also targeting the right person, right? Because usually that person should be the hiring manager. And it also sometimes means, especially when you're doing these transitions in between industries, that is best go after hiring manager, go after the network, your existing network of people, because some of your network would have changed industries as well. So go through that connections rather than applying for jobs. So the channel you use is critical. And also there's hiring managers and hiring managers. And I can't stress this enough. If a person, I don't know, ended up being chief supply chain officer or chief operations officer after 20 years or 30 years with the same company and growing like this, they're likely to have a certain mindset, right? Whereas if somebody joined because they've done a couple of things, they're going to have a different mindset. So you also need to be mindful of, there's going to be hiring managers that are going to, especially like Tariq that I just gave you the example, right? Of course, he's just done transitions of industries himself. So he will be open for people like you that want to transition industries, right? He's done it. He knows it's successful. He knows it helped him. Great. If you go to the other person that has worked 30 years in the same company, they might not think like that. So you also need to be, you know, mindful. It's not personal. It's not about you when you make these transitions, but you need to go to the right channel, to the right person. And third principle, numbers game. I mean, don't expect you contact one person and that one person will give you a job. I mean, it happens maybe in fairy tales, movies, or if you strike the Toto, the lottery, but it's unlikely to happen in normal job search, yeah? So it is obviously going to be grinding, try different things. Again, speak to a lot of people, networking, all of those good things. Of course, headhunters like us. But again, by and large, in all fairness, if I'm to tell you about the principles of recruitment, right? Typically, when people come to us as executive search, even if we do try to tell them, look, be open-minded, we also have to stick to the brief we get from the client. So if my client, again, is that 30-year-old in one company person, they're likely to tell me, just find me a person that has in the same industry for the last, or that hasn't switched that much in the last year. So I can't position somebody like you, right, that has spent 8 years in an industry and wants to cross. But again, it's not that is something wrong with you. It's just use the right channel, right, and go to the right hiring manager. And then remember, it's a numbers game, right? So speak to recruiters, speak to your network, speak to HR, you never know. And try all of these things, and then you maximize your chances of success. But it's never a straight line. A great person, you can follow her, you can find her on LinkedIn, Donna Wharton. She's the global head of supply chain for Microsoft. She tells a lot of stories around how a lot of times she moved laterally, she moved even downwards, because life is not a straight line up, yeah? And these transitions is normally that sometimes you might need to go lateral, sometimes, you know, maybe you were director in your last company and you need to go senior manager to take, you know, a role in a different industry. That's fine, yeah? I mean, everybody needs to start somewhere. Now, I would, however, not advise you to go entry level, right? Because then maybe it's a little bit too much of a, you know, so one step down, fine. But, you know, also don't go too far off, because depending on circumstances, you need to take this call. It can take a while to go back up, right? Again, cases and cases. If you go into a company like, I don't know, Zalando or fast growing e-commerce, or I mean, those guys in 1 year I've seen, we work with Wayfair. If you're familiar, maybe some of you are familiar. It's a large furniture e-commerce company, mostly in Germany and UK, however, in Europe. In Wayfair, I've seen promotions twice a year because they grow so fast, right? So even there, it's not always a straight answer. So long answer to the question, Mar, hopefully it is relevant. But if I'm to summarize, don't throw away the baby with the bathwater. Your experience is relevant and is valuable, even if it's in a different industry. Two, focus on the right channel, the right person. Usually that right person is the hiring manager. And three, it's a numbers game, network, network, network. Don't expect you're going to get that job from one interaction. Just, you know, 99% you're going to get no's. You just need one yes.
So do you think that we should not sacrifice anything when we are moving to other industry or to other country, right? So at the end is how we are managing the connections and how to find the right people to try to get our jobs there.
So sacrifice is one word. I would say this in life is usually compromises are necessary, right? It's okay. So blessed are the flexible, mm-hmm. as they will never be bent out of shape. So I have a lot of smart sayings like that. It's not mine. I learned it from others, so don't worry. But, you know, you got to be flexible. I doubt that without any sort of compromise, you can easily make these transitions, right? There's always going to give and take, yeah, like anything mm-hmm. in life. Typically. Mm-hmm. But does that mean that you need to go back to entry level? No, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do the companies request the work permit or visa in general, or depends on the company? So because you have experience with dealing with different industries, different companies, we are experienced also here because we are hosting companies at the campus. So in general, what do you think about it?
It's very much country specific. Like when I got into Singapore 13 years ago, 14 years ago, it was fairly easy to get there. Even two, three, 4 years ago, it was fairly straightforward and it was also desirable. Now, one, the government has made it a lot more difficult to get working visas in Singapore. And two, the tractability of Singapore as a location with all the travel restrictions has diminished. That's Singapore, right? In Dubai, it's fairly straightforward. In Europe, depending. But it also depends where do you come from. Like I have a friend, she's Singaporean. She's trying to get a visa in Switzerland. She's having massive headaches. Because, you know, I mean, there's laws and there's, you know, there's the European Union and there's preferences and there's, so it depends, right? It depends on the country that you want to work. It depends on your nationality. Definitely there's places where it's going to be a hell of a lot harder than others. And definitely as a principle, the more specific your skill sets are, usually the better. So if you're a rocket scientist, you're likely to find a job anywhere because there's not a lot of rocket scientists. Now, if you're a supply chain management by and large, maybe it's not as specific as a skill. So then you got to pick a little bit your battles and where you're most likely to stand out, right? So that's as far as I could, without having a specific example, could share a big picture.
Okay, thank you. The following that we have prepared, where could we find a piece of information about the cost of living in the different countries to negotiate our salary band correctly during the recruitment process? Because, for example, just only in Europe, we have completely different cost living depends on the country. So it used to be one of the questions frequently, how we can find the tools to manage our negotiation about the salary band.
So I had a friend that asked me about Singapore, and I mean, look, there are certain things, right? There's like the Mercer, I don't know what index of salaries, and there are some global indexes that you can check. Mm-hmm. By and large, however, I would say that none of them is 100% accurate, and you need to do your own research. So if you know, okay, I'm going to get a job in France, well, phone some friends in France and find out. Because I had a discussion with the hiring manager that was telling me, look, my HR is telling me the salary band is this. And I told him, maybe it was before COVID, but now with COVID, where everybody's willing to pay a lot more salaries for logistics, for supply chain, because the costs of logistics and supply chain have gone, the main cost of CapEx all of a sudden, right? The main cost of investment in the product. Do you think that the company will still want, I mean, they're fighting for the same talent. So maybe before they paid 100K, now they're willing to pay 150K.
Yeah,
sure. You can refer to the salary band 2 years ago, 1 year ago, fine. But does that actually make any sense? No. So the only way to have the concrete information is actually by doing the research on the market specific from the people that actually work there, live there, ideally. And talk to some headhunters. They would know, actually. So if you get a job in a specific market, talk to some recruiters or headhunters. They would actually probably be the best to tell you what's going on, right? Because they would work on such jobs.
And I think that right now we are in a very sweet moment for logistics and supply chain profiles hunting, right? So probably, as you mentioned, they have changed a little bit. They have been increased a little bit respect to 2 years ago.
Yeah. So I had a conversation today with a very senior executive, global heads of Kuehne+Nagel, right? Kuehne+Nagel is the top logistics company in the world. And he was saying that now his conversations are mostly with CEOs and COOs because his clients put him in front of the CEO to explain to the CEO why the price of logistics is so high, because the CEO doesn't want to believe the head of supply chain or the head of logistics. And then this guy goes in and says, yeah. And because the companies were used to, one, it was almost for free, right? So shipping things was, if you had the volumes, it was almost for free before. And nobody cared. It was just some item on the P&L that nobody really gave a damn. All of a sudden, now it becomes business critical. It can get you bankrupt. Your costs are super high, your inventory or your ships are stuck in ports, you don't have your goods delivered, or you have it in the wrong places, you're screwed. So of course that means, and also we've never been busier, because that means that they've also realized, hey, maybe some of the talent that we have is not the best. So that's why, you know, people like yourselves that are being trained, that are being upgraded, I think that you come also in high demand because you're having the newest skills, knowledge that is available in supply chain. Secondly, there's a churn in companies, right? So people get fired or people leave because there's plenty of offers out there and maybe they're sick of the current environment. They get 20, 30, 50% increase. We've just closed an offer and the person got 50% increase.
Wow.
This is not something normal. And also, it's not going to last forever. But right now, it's a nice, nice party for most people in supply chain and logistics. So that's another reality. So I would say it's a great time to come to market now, right, with these skills. But again, remember what I said at the very beginning. It is key that you go to the right people that understand the value. And usually the people that understand the value are the people that either own the P&Ls, right? So it's the CEOs, COOs, CSOs, or the people that feel the biggest pain, head of logistics, supply chain, right? Where you can fix pain. You know, those are the areas which I would focus on.
And following, I mean, now it's very interesting because one of the questions that we prepared was about the key hard skill needed right now. So what do you consider about the right skills to have now as supply chain professional? I mean, we mentioned in the context of 4IR, acceleration, but I will, maybe we can extend in general because now it's very competitive as well.
Okay, let me start general.
Okay,
so in principle, yeah, but, you know, fourth industrial revolution, anything to do with automation, data analytics, Internet of Things, digital towers, digital transformation in supply chain, all of that good stuff, super relevant, right? Now, if you know even more specific than that, you know, robotics, you know, I don't know, there's RPA that's being used, but it's not a super difficult robotic process automation. It's not a super difficult. But again, if you've had some experience or there's courses out there, there's even Udemy, there's a lot of free stuff as well. So if you have those type of skills, I think depending on the right company, and a lot of them are implementing, doing, transforming, then you can come into play very nicely as one piece of the puzzle. One of the first jobs that I got, maybe it's useful, personal story. You know, you're asking, okay, I didn't think of this. You're asking about switching industry. So I started 3 years in consulting. I was doing consulting, training, development. Then I went on to set up my own company, which I failed miserably. Like within 8-12 months, I was done, finished. And then I had to find a job. So I was referred to Oracle, and I met in Oracle, the big tech company. I met in Oracle, one of the business unit's heads, who was 20 years in Oracle. And the guy asked me, so tell me about yourself. And I told him this and that. And at some point I had taken some time off to travel around the world. And I was telling these things to this guy, and he was completely unimpressed. It's like, you know, 20-year career in Oracle, worked his whole life, and I was 5-6 years, and not really relevant experience, you know, also startups and guy that traveled around the world. He was like, okay. But I happened to know Sandler Sales Training, which was a methodology of sales that he wanted to implement and train his team in. Mm-hmm. So he hired me because of that. Hired me, even if on the background, even if it was a different industry, I had done some sales and consulting in fairness, but so I knew a very specific piece that he needed in his team. Sometimes it's also a matter of, I did artificial intelligence, or I did the machine learning projects in supply chain, and the person or the company is happening to do that, right? Mm-hmm. Or they're implementing a digital twin in a factory and you did that. Right. Even if you had to do it in FMCG and this person is in electronics, who cares? It's still digital towers, right? So this type of things can help you also in this transition. So I mentioned that these are the hard skills, right? But by and large, don't discount soft skills. I would say that soft skills are underrated. It's the soft skills more than hard skills a lot of the times. And usually the best C-level executives that I have seen appreciate the drive, appreciate, again, I can't stress it enough. You go, you show initiative. You know, I had a candidate that literally sent different case studies of how he would improve companies to their executives. Now, of course, not all of the executives replied to him, but one or two saw the effort that he had done and replied because, wow, this guy is really putting the extra effort. And then he ended up doing some interviews for some of these companies and getting a job. So it's that persistency, going to the right person, also showing that you're different, right? Because again, when you go to the executive, how many candidates go to the executive? Not that many, trust me, because it's not psychologically safe. It's much safer to apply to the LinkedIn job that 10,000 million other applicants do apply. And then you're wondering, how come I didn't get a reply? Well, because there's 100,000 other applicants. And unless you very much fit exactly the same box that the HR, God knows how good the HR is, you're not going to get selected. Whereas if you go to the executive, there's very, it's pretty unlikely that so many people are doing that. Soft skills. Yeah, soft skills are underrated. Team building skills, leadership skills, influencing skills that you don't learn in school. That's where, even in Zaragoza, I mean, you learn to a certain extent, but that's where the 7, 8, 10 years of experience that you have puts you in a way better position than anybody that is just starting. Because you have soft skills. And also remember, last 2 years were online. You don't really build soft skills that easily online. I don't know about you, but I doubt that. Yeah? So
we have learned a lot in the last 2 years. Yes, it's true.
Yeah.
And following what you mentioned now, other questions that we have, why operations and supply chain leaders will make great CEOs?
I think perhaps what is missing today and what we need more of is of supply chain people who own that and who truly believe that and who act as business partners. So I think also historically, right, maybe supply chain or logistics or what operations has been seen at the back of the room. It has firmly moved to the front of the room the last 2 years, firmly. It has moved to the board. It is on the agenda of the C-level. It's also a mental game. You all need to believe this. It is true, by the way. It's 1,000% true. And you got to believe it and stand by it and then act accordingly.
Do we have any other opinion? Do you like to participate?
Yeah, I actually had a question regarding the second part that you were talking about, the soft skills. The thing is that when we present ourselves to any job vacancy, most of the time what we're asked is to send our CVs. And how did you share those soft skills? Like you're talking about drive, you're talking about teamwork. All of those soft skills require context, require more explanation rather than the one or two lines that we have on the CV.
Look, great question. And there's the problem with CVs. You can't. or it's unlikely that you're going to, you know, somebody's going to read through the CV and figure out your soft skills. That's where all the part around the CV is so key, right? How do you follow up? How do you engage? How do you stay in contact? How do you, you know, there's creative ways. And again, every process, it's unlikely that you're going to be the only ones applying for a role or considered, right? So every process, you also need to think that how do I stand out, right? And what would be ways in which I can stand out? And there's from wacky ideas. There was a candidate that was sending out donuts, and inside the donut box was his CV. Now, this was a marketing applicant, right? So it may work in the realm of marketing. That's the way they stood out. Now, in the realm of supply chain, there's things that you can do. I mean, you can also include video or something, you know, that shows, look, he went the extra mile. Now, again, it depends a little bit. What's the job? How much do you know about the job? Do you have some sense of the pain points? Also, what's your strength? I wouldn't suggest you learn how to make videos unless you really have a passion for it. If you're good at that, sure, do that, right? If you're not good at videos, maybe you do, I don't know, you make a PowerPoint presentation where you come up, like I told you, right, with some ideas of how the company can improve. And you do that extra. So that shows, okay, I've just had the discussion for hiring somebody in our team. She came up with the presentation. We gave her a case study. She came up, okay, this was my thought process. Punk, you presented. This is why I think this works, punk, right? So that's on top of whatever the CV that she had applied for the job. And it showed me, look, she has analytical skills. She has the drive. She had attention for detail, right? That's how she demonstrated, right? So, but that's also a little bit the trick. The easiest way in which people can also get rid of you and say, send me your CV, right? So don't let it stop there, especially if it's something that you really, really want. Yes, send the CV, but then send something extra. Show that you're really keen. Contact some more people in that company. Do follow-ups. All of these things are the soft element to your application and prove the soft element to your application.
Okay, makes sense. Thank you.
Do you have any other questions about what we were talking till now before we are moving to the following question?
I have a question. When recruiting people, I mean, you do it as a consultant and a headhunter, but us also, we might be all end up in the position or are in the positions where we need to recruit people globally and remotely. And we still need to make sure that the hard skills and soft skills are there. So what would you recommend us to take as the guiding principles on securing that the team members we need to recruit that are as they should be under these conditions what we are today?
Excellent point, yeah. And we're likely to continue to live hybrid times, so new world of work, whatever that means. And for sure, that will mean flexibility and will mean much more office remote combination. I mean, I don't know if I have a magic formula. I think, again, it's back to the principles or back to, you know, and the principle is common sense is not that common. But common sense principles to me would be always as part of the process, I advise to include some sort of case study. Talk is cheap. You know, it's also the higher you go in your career, the more likely is that you will know how to interview. I tend not to put a lot of emphasis on that. I mean, of course, I mean, it can be a disqualifier, but otherwise it's a hygiene. You know, it's normally that you should interview fairly okay. But the case study tells you, right? I mean, I've just had this experience on a job with a client. Before the case study, they had rated player candidate A top, candidate B a maybe. After the case study, candidate A was disqualified. Candidate B, very good presentation, very good solid framework, went to the next step, right? So I would always include a relevant case study to the job to see how, what exactly can they deliver. That's one. Two, such a simple thing, but again, many people forget, ref checks. So it gives you some perspective, but always try to get some sort of informal, and always make sure you interview and you get ref checks from people that reported to them. Because it's one thing to ask their boss. I mean, typically, again, people know how to manage upwards. That's not where the test of true character is, in my opinion. It's how do you manage your staff? That's where you see a lot better the character of people. Yeah, I would do ref checks, informally if possible, with people that worked for and peers. Because they would typically give you some boss. But again, most people are okay with managing their bosses. Otherwise, it's a fairly short life in a company. So that's another thing. And another thing, I mean, that I would say, again, common sense, but depending on the company, the structure, the how many layers and stakeholders and how matrix the organization is, most companies that I deal with and we deal with, no matter even after we do our best, they're still not aligned. Like, you know, the bigger the companies, you're going to have the main stakeholder, but then you're going to have a couple of other stakeholders and they're all going to have opinions. So, you know, I can't stress that enough that ideally as a company, you should really try to get as close as an alignment is never going to be perfect before you even start the recruitment process, right? Because how are you going to know who recruits if you're not even internally aligned? And that happens a lot. And then you end up wasting your time, the candidate's time you can waste. You also get into potentially damaging image of the company, of your team, and so on. So that's another thing that I see as a mistake that companies make. They go ahead with trying to hire somebody and then they figure out they don't know, they're not aligned, they have conflicting agendas. Yeah, and increasingly in our world, it should be clear, how much flexibility do you have in terms of, do they need to be office-based? Can they be remote? Can the company make it happen? What does the candidate want? How do they want it? Their personal life, get clarity in terms of that. Do they have, you know, two kids at home and they will need to take care of the kids whilst working? All of those things that maybe before were we had less worry about, now it becomes extremely important to make sure that is there and taken care of. So this again, some principles, I don't know if there's a silver bullet, but I think if you do this, you increase your chances of not screwing up.
Thank you.
You mentioned now one point that it was more or less included in one of the questions, no? Because we were talking about flexibility and working remotely, no? Especially when you are dealing with your familiar life as well. One of the questions that we had is like, which kind of benefits offer the companies in senior and executive roles? Which one is the tendency right now? Because it has changed as well. So do we have any, I mean, like a general rule or is... Again, depends on the company about the benefits. I mean, like shares or pension schemes.
I saw something on LinkedIn that I loved. There was one person that said, bean bags, free beer, and massage in the office does not make for a culture. Look, you can get the wackiest of benefits. And also you as a hiring manager, depending what company you're going to end up working for, if it's Google versus, you know, some will have all sorts of benefits. I have not seen long-term, you know, when you go into an office or even in your home, or if you stayed in a fancy hotel and the view is amazing, mm-hmm. and you are utterly impressed and mind-boggled for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, half an hour. But after that, that's it. It becomes the norm. Mm-hmm. It's the same with benefits, with most benefits. So I don't see, yes, of course, you know, again, I think, yeah, a huge life-changing benefit is if you're a parent and you need to go home to pick up your kid and the company allows you to do that versus the company that doesn't allow you to do that and insists that you need to work from office, that's a huge difference to that particular person. Whether they have free beer, I don't know. I mean, so I don't think it matters. Mm-hmm. And I've seen, you know, that's why I'm saying I can't emphasize this enough, culture. I mean, and culture is such a fluffy term, but it's like, how do you take care of your people? How do they feel? Do they feel that they work in a team? Would they refer your company and your team and your workplace to their friends to work there? That's a very good question. If the answer is yes, amazing. If the answer is no, you have a problem, right? It's these things that matter way more than all this. I don't think anybody should, and anybody does, choose the job based on the benefits. I think they choose the job based on, of course, scope, vision, what am I trying, what am I contributing? Of course, you need to make money. I mean, there's a hygiene factor. I mean, nobody works for free unless we're millionaires. So you need to have a purpose, first and foremost. Yes, you need to have the right salary. And then is the culture, is the team, is the who do you work with, right? That matters a lot. So, and of course, career progression, where can I go? Now, obviously, each and every one of us and you have different priorities depending on where you are in life, right? And again, those priorities change. But I think, by and large, what matters is to have that flexibility. If you're the hiring manager, to give flexibility to the best of the framework of the company. I was talking to Amazon Robotics and their executive team, and they asked me, how do we retain our people? Do we need to pay them more money? Do we give them more shares? And I'm like, there was a room full of very high IQ people, but I sensed the lack of EQ. I mean, people don't need more money. That's not, I mean, fine, maybe it matters up to a point, but again, it's like that beautiful view. I mean, yeah, okay, great. 1 month, the salary is 10,000 more. Great. Then they'll forget. Yeah. Then it's going to be, I still don't like what I'm doing. So, I mean, you need to address the core, not the periphery. Usually to me, benefits, money, salaries, of course, if it's not right, if it's completely out of whack with the market, then you have a problem. But if it's in tune with the market, then it's not about that typically that makes people stay or leave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree with you. And maybe one question that we have as well, but it could be a little bit of general. Do we have any average recruitment process length by continent? For example, could be in general in Europe. I mean, I know that Amazon is taking longer, but could be between 2 months, 3 months. Or do you have any experience or that maybe we can inspire us about the recruitment process length?
The fastest I've seen is 2 days. The longest I've seen, I'm still ongoing. I have one candidate that we started him on the process with the company a year ago, and he's still on the process. So, you know, anywhere in between 2 days to a year, we would safe estimate.
Okay. So,
and of course, it depends. I mean, the more senior the role, typically the more layers and stakeholders are involved. The less senior the role, it can be faster, right? But I wouldn't say there's necessarily a hard and fast rule. Yeah, there's certain companies that are extremely procedural. There's others in startups that can be very fast. This, I don't know if there's a hard and fast rule for this.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any recommendation for our students to follow the recruitment process? Because, I mean, in a few cases, they can be exhausted. So if they are dealing with more of one, and while they are still with their academic responsibilities, also familiar responsibilities?
Look, for most of us, if we're not psychopaths and devoid of emotions, job searches are draining, are hard. It's hard. It's an emotionally difficult journey, right? You have to deal with the rejection. It's just part of most job searches. So, I mean, again, practical things. It's best if you have somebody that you do it with, right? Again, you're a class or you're, I don't know, 20, 30 on this call, right? You can help each other. You can make pairs, threes, right? You can encourage each other. That always helps. Typically, it does help, right? So I would advise for things like that, it can be good. Knowledge, knowing that it's going to be a numbers game, right, helps others, right? So that's why I'm saying there's depending a little bit. You need to know yourselves, right? There's people that are more extroverted, that are people that are more introverted. There's people that are more process-driven. If you're process-driven and you can function like that and say, look, doesn't matter. I have a target of 50 people to contact. Doesn't matter how many no's I get, whatever, right? I just hit that. If you can do that without taking it personal about the no's, perfect. Most people can't. And they will feel, you know, it's a mental game. So you need to look after your mental and your emotional state whilst you're doing it. Now, I can't tell you what works for each and every one of you because that's an element of self-awareness in there. Typically, yeah, for most people, if you try to find somebody that's close to you or some other people that you're doing it with, right, and you're helping each other, it tends to work better, right? And it's like anything, it's like a team sport, right? So that's a sparring partner, right? That's good. I don't know if I have other practical advice, but yeah, do expect it to be up and down. It's not going to be a straight, usually it's not a straight hit the jackpot search.
Thank you, Radu. And about to build and nurture relationship for a career path you want, do you have any recommendation?
So there is a podcast, and I do recommend all of you listen to it. We had Shelley Archambault. So Shelley was the first Black female that was a CEO of a software company. Shelley sits on the boards of 3, 4, 5, I don't know, listed companies in US. She wrote a book called Unapologetically Ambitious. She's a super structured woman, super go-getter. She gives a lot of tips on how do you do that? How do you build relationships over the long run? How do you do a step-by-step planning of her career? Worked in her case. So listen to that podcast if you haven't, right? So if you can find it on Elkett Podcast, just see Shelley. In my case, it was completely random. I did some consulting, then traveled the world, then I set up my company, failed, then went to Oracle, then went to another company. Then I accidentally ended up in headhunting and executive search. And here I am 10 years later, seems to be doing quite well. And I happened to fall into supply chain 10 years ago. And here I am fairly, I would hope by now established, but it was fairly random for me. So can I say that I have built relationship with any goal? I mean, to be fair, in my case, I did not necessarily have a goal. Like even now, if you ask me, I kind of know what I'm going to do in 1 or 2 years and kind of have an intention for the next 10 years. But I'm not the person that I'm extremely planned myself. So I'm just addressing the fact that certain people will have a very good plan. Certain people won't. Even the people that have a very good plan, that plan might change. So I'm going to challenge a little bit the assumption that you need to build a relationship for a specific goal. I think you should just build relationships because that's the right thing to do. Because if you always have the back, I'm saying great work, man. And then I'm saying, can you help me? I mean, people feel that. Yeah. So I can't emphasize this enough. We feel we are human beings. We know when people do things just for the sake of getting something from us. To me, I love what I do because I think I'm trying to help people, and relationships to me is a way of doing that. Mm-hmm. But pragmatically, that's the only way in which you can sustain a career, because that's how we operate in a society. It's people helping people, right? So just challenging a little bit, I'm building the relationship for the purpose of my career. Fine, nothing wrong with that in particular. But I would say just also remember, a relationship only is a relationship if it's give and take. If you're also giving something to that person, and you cannot expect, I just approached the CEO and he agreed for a coffee. I'm going to close him on that coffee. I'm going to say, hey, Mr. Tim Cook, you have a job. I mean, maybe, but I would not suggest you do that. It's a long-term game. That's what most people don't get. Like, they go for the kill. Let me ask. It's fine as well. I mean, in a job search process, fine, go ask, right? I mean, it's clear cut. But most things take time. So that's why maintaining and building relationships. And you have LinkedIn. We all have LinkedIn, right? Mm-hmm. It's such a beautiful tool to do that, right? And stay in touch and comment and, congratulate. But these small things add up over time. So I would say it's a critical piece. The most successful people that I have seen are the best networkers in what they do and in their careers. And by the way, a lot of them are introverts. This has nothing to do with being introverted or extroverted. This has a lot to do with being intentional, knowing for a fact that unless your network is your net worth. You've heard that before, I'm sure. It's such a cliche, but it's so freaking true, right? So, but again, you can't approach this, okay, great, I'm connected to this person on LinkedIn. I'm exaggerating here, but I've seen a lot of people. Like, I sometimes accept people on LinkedIn, and next thing I see, do you want to buy semiconductors from Shenzhen? I'm like, what are you doing? I block them immediately, right? So it's long-term. And you can be intentional. I mean, one of my good friends, Ina, she's an introverted person. It doesn't come naturally to her, but she's very structured. That's how it works for her. She has a file with all these people, and then she's keeping in touch, right? So, and it's not necessarily that she has the intention, okay, I need to do something. I need to sell them. It's long term.
Thank you, Radu. Somebody else would like to ask any question?
Hi, thank you very much for the session. So to advance in your career, typically you need to network within the company. My question is more, how do you select the right mentor in the company you join and how do you establish connection?
First, yeah, mentors, cannot stress how important they are. It's just incredibly important. And having the right mentors is incredibly, incredibly useful. Again, in that podcast that I will send Mar to send to you, Shelley highlights that. Now, the good part is that you don't need to have one mentor. You can have more. There's no restriction in the number of mentors that you can have. And I would actually advise you to try to have several if you can, and you always can. Because maybe you have a mentor that is already in the career that you want, right? So obviously they can give you some very good advice on how to get there. Maybe you have a mentor in a particular soft skills. They're incredibly good at public speaking and maybe you want to learn that, right? Don't restrict yourself. It can be several mentors. And networking within the company, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, like there's no way in which you can progress without networking and without having the right relationships. I would, however, stress, and there are some huge companies out there, and just to know even people on the same floor or in your teams takes a while, right? Let alone. So you can network, if you're in Oracle, all your life you can network in Oracle and you're not going to finish Oracle because also people will be leaving. And my sincere advice is never end up in a situation where your network is only in the same company because you never know. Companies restructure and it's a dangerous, plus it's not healthy in fairness, because I think you should always keep a pulse on what's happening in the market. And I see this over and over again. Typically the people that end up staying 20, 30 or 10, 15 years in the same company end up having lower salaries than people that have moved around 3, 4, 5 years because the increase. And again, it's not necessarily only about the money here, right? But it's just about being pragmatic. I also see people that, are in the same company, get an offer from outside. Then the company realizes, oh, we love you so much. Let us give you an increase and match the offer that you got externally. So do not only network internally. Always make sure that you network also externally. And on the mentors specifically, I would say, obviously, ask for mentorship from people that you respect and maybe are where you want to be and get. And don't restrict yourself to one. You can have several mentors, and that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm wondering, how should we approach, headhunter companies or people? Because, you are in this world. And if we want to pick one, what should we look at it?
Now, the thing with, and I think most people may not understand this properly, and I've gotten this myself, right? We always try to reply and but ultimately headhunters are paid by clients. And ultimately clients have a mandate. So, a lot of times candidates think that somehow headhunters are there for them. They're not there for them. I mean, it's nothing personal, but, it's a business. So we are getting paid by the client. So it's likely that if the client gives me a job that your profile fits, I'll be speaking to you. If it doesn't fit, then maybe not, right? So I would say with headhunters, it needs to be a practical approach. Now, the best is go after the specialized ones, because if you're specialized, like we are, right, in supply chain, there's a chance that people like you that are supply chain operations, manufacturing focused, we will always have some sort of job that somewhere down the line may fit, right? So go after people that have had 3 to 5 years of experience in recruitment in a specific industry. But again, focus on what is key. Key for you is hiring managers, is people that can actually directly give you a job. Yes, include headhunters in part of your networking tool and portfolio. The specialized ones, the ones that have been 3 to 5 years in the industry are the best.
Great, thank you.
Thank you very much, Radu. So it has been a real honor to have you and to listen to you with all your experience about the recruitment in executive and senior profiles. So thank you very much and all of our students to attend the session today.
My pleasure. I also do encourage everybody, feel free to connect on LinkedIn and listen to our podcast. I think it's useful, and see you all soon. Glad to have been here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
See you.
Thank you,
Christina. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to go to www.elcottglobal.com and click the podcast button for all the show notes of the interview. Also, subscribe to our mailing list to get our latest updates first. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes, Spotify or Stitcher, we would appreciate a kind review. 5-star works best to keep us going and our production team happy. And of course, share it with your friends. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me. And if you have any suggestions on what to do and who to invite next, don't hesitate to drop me a note. And if you're looking to hire top executives in supply chain or transform your business, of course, contact us as well to find out how we can help.